From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, September 9th, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
Well, the Maine CDC reported another 620 cases of COVID-19 today, and five more Mainers with the disease have died. On Wednesday, State CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah said that case numbers are expected to be high over the coming days as the agency processes a backlog of more than 2,000 positive lab results currently awaiting review. As of this morning, 193 Mainers were hospitalized with the disease, with 74 in critical care and 38 on ventilators. As the Delta variant continues to infect and hospitalize more Mainers, Portland City Councilors are planning to vote on a citywide mask mandate next week. Yesterday, city officials held a workshop to discuss reinstating a mask mandate for public indoor spaces. The city is believed to be the first Maine town to take that step, but it would follow similar policies adopted by several others around New England. Portland Health and Human Services Director Kristen Dow told the councilors that with cases and hospitalizations on the rise, the city does need to act, especially with many children still unvaccinated.
The department recommends that we do everything we can until we see the numbers improve, and masking is one proven layer of protection against COVID-19.
Most councilors appeared to support a mask mandate, although some had questions about how long it would be in place and what health metrics would be used to determine when it should end. City staff say they plan to finalize their proposal over the next few days, including potential exemptions while eating or performing. The policy is expected to be voted on at a meeting on Monday. Northern Light Mercy Hospital is launching an aftercare program for COVID patients who find themselves with lingering symptoms, sometimes long after the initial infection is healed. Common symptoms include fatigue, shortness of breath, and brain fog.
Actually, pretty common to even have some palpitations, like heart fluttering.
Primary care medical director Dr. Sue Ann Hammond says patient experiences can vary widely, and much is still unknown about potential long-term effects.
We want anybody who has post-COVID symptoms to have a place to be supported, where we can do a medical evaluation, connect you with the appropriate resources, and then have a long-term relationship with you as we all learn more about what's going to happen down the road.
The hospital is collaborating with Massachusetts General Hospital on developing care plans for patients after they've had COVID-19. People who've had COVID-19 with lasting symptoms can contact Mercy Hospital to request an evaluation. The Maine Department of Labor says first-time claims for state unemployment benefits have hit a new pandemic low. Just 680 people filed new claims for benefits in the week ending last Saturday. The state reports since the pandemic began in March 2020, Mainers have received over $2.4 billion in jobless benefits. Most of that, $1.8 billion, came from federal programs. Conservation groups have filed a federal lawsuit against the owner of four dams on the Kennebec River, alleging that the company is violating the Endangered Species Act. The groups say that Brookfield Renewable has been breaking the law by harming salmon since the end of 2019. Nick Bennett, a staff scientist with the Natural Resources Council of Maine, says data show that more than 40% of juvenile salmon are being killed as they migrate downriver.
It's time that somebody holds them accountable for all the endangered salmon that they've killed.
In a statement, the company says that it is, quote, committed to responsible operations and filed a species protection plan in May. Brookfield says it will continue to work to limit impacts on migrating fish, including some station shutdowns, which it initiated in May. You are listening to This Day in Maine. Twenty years ago, Kevin Hogan of Falmouth was a firefighter in the Bronx. On Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, he had the day off. But when the first plane struck the World Trade Center, he headed into the city to help. He jumped onto a pickup truck carrying firefighters to Ground Zero.
As we were going down, the second building had come down. Once we parked, everybody just dispersed, you know. So I was by myself for a few minutes, walking to the site. I remember asking people, you know, if they were okay, and it was like they weren't responding. They were kind of like in a daze. You know, they were full of soot. It was like a snowstorm. It was, you couldn't really see. And then we started like searching for people. So what they would do is they would assign a group of men, and they'd have a spotter when they got the heavy machinery around, and they would start pulling the material that they were gonna be moving around to get further into the collapse site. And when the spotter saw anything that would be any kind of clothing or anything that he thought would be possible human remains and things, he would put his hand up and everything would stop, and then the whatever group was there would work in that area. What I would do is I would pray. I would ask God to help me to find something that would give someone closure so that their loved one would be found. I was getting off in the mornings. I would get back to the firehouse and then go back down. And then as time went on, it was firehouse, site, and memorials. Funerals were endless. I probably went to my friend Patty and I, who was with me on the day that we went down. We stopped counting at like 78 funerals. Aside from doing all the funerals from our loved ones and brothers and sisters that got killed down there on 9/11, now you're going to funerals of brothers and sisters that died from the outcome of being exposed to the toxins. There's a gentleman that worked in my firehouse in the Bronx, just passed away in July, and he wasn't even 50 years old, and he had 3 kids, and he died of cancer from 9/11. When I get a phone call from guys I haven't heard from, I think, okay, who's sick? Instead of like, oh, it's Chris, you know, or I haven't spoken to Chris in a while, I wonder how he's doing. It's like, all right, what happened? I've been diagnosed with reactive airway disease. I have asthma. How much time do you have? No, I have asthma, chronic bronchitis. I have rhinitis and sinusitis. And now I've come down with, a few years ago, an autoimmune disease. I have rheumatoid arthritis. The PTSD is something you obviously learn to live with. I've been getting some treatment for it. When I'm sitting in my pity pot, you know, I will say to myself, there are 343 guys that wish they were in your place right now. You know, and then when I say that, then I think of some of my friends and I laugh with them. You know, I still talk to guys that were dear to me that I lost that day. I still have conversations with them. You know, it's pretty, sounds crazy, but it's when I'm working on the house and stuff and I think of the guys and I have conversations with them. It's just, it's endless. It really is. I feel blessed to be where I am today.
I'm Katie Hogan, Kevin's wife.
So there's a photojournalist. He approached the chiefs and asked them if they would mind if he took some photos of the remaining firefighters, and he wanted to put them on display at the Portland Museum of Art. And he asked us to come up.
My girlfriend, who's my dearest friend from childhood, had contacted me about this event at the Portland Museum of Art. So I attended it with her. So I just remember catching a glimpse of Kevin, and he just looked so sad and lonely, standing at the bottom of the stairs. And I immediately walked over to him and I'm like, I just want to give you a hug. I'm like, can I give you a hug? We did revisit each other the following evening and had a nice dinner with them. And as a result, we had exchanged contact information. And I decided to apply to NYU, got an apartment, and I drove down on January 2nd of 2002, and I parked on 13th Street, and I hand-delivered my application, and I looked across the street, and there was a firehouse.
Came down, and here's this cute face standing there. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Katie. We got married in August of 2006. I was still working, you know, full duty at the firehouse, and then came on the injuries and the illnesses in 2007-2008. During that time, we had two wonderful children, and moved up to Maine in 2011, and now we live here in Falmouth, Maine. So out of something horrific, the most horrific time of my life came my angel. Katie was put in my life to, I think, to help me get through this.
Kevin Hogan retired in 2008 due to health issues related to his work at Ground Zero. This weekend, as he and his wife do every year, the Hogans will head to New York to honor all the firefighters who have been lost as a result of 9/11. Life has changed significantly over the last 20 years. If you're a younger person, you might not know that some of those changes that have taken place are the direct result of the September 11th terrorist attacks. We're joined now by Chet Lunner, who lives here in Maine. His CV is so full that it's kind of hard to know how to introduce him. Former congressional chief of staff, worked at the Transportation Department, and served as a Homeland Security intelligence officer at the Department of Homeland Security, a department which was itself born from the aftermath of 9/11. Well, welcome, Chet.
Thank you.
Immediately, one of the aspects that jumps to my mind is that of travel. You know, the term gels and liquids I don't think was ever heard prior to that. Screening, the TSA itself was a product of 9/11 and the whole process. So cast your mind back 20 years ago. Someone just gets on a plane for a nice little trip somewhere. How is it different now, the thinking behind that same trip today?
We have to identify every single person who's on that airplane. You and the other passengers, and the crew, and the person who cooked the breakfast that they'll serve, and the people who delivered it, and the people who cleaned the plane. There's an enormous population of people in the United States society and around the world who were never subject to this sort of intensive of situational awareness. We had security was sort of an afterthought. Airlines were in charge of it, not the government. So if you got screened at all, you got screened by someone who was minimum wage. And the joke at the time was, if you went from a screener at the airport to Cinnabon food court worker, that would be a promotion. If you were a truck driver, you could pick up your load at the harbor down here on Commercial Street without going through any security, except looking at your shipping documents. Now you have to have a special federal document. So there's a bunch of external things like that, but internally, I think we changed as a nation, and it's just we have a different perspective of our lives.
All right, so let's talk more about cultural changes. You know, certainly one of the phrases that I'd never seen before or a concept I'd never been aware of before was the if you see something, say something concept. If you see an unattended package, you should call it in. And, you know, if you suspect anything, that was kind of a new concept for a lot of people, wasn't it?
I suppose it was new to a lot of people. It wasn't new to those of us who were in the senior generations. You know, when I was growing up, if you were a bad boy on the way home from school, Mrs. Smith would punish you and then call ahead so your parents could punish you some more. That sort of a sense of a communal responsibility was strong back then, weakened until 9/11, and now I think needs reinforcing every day. We don't have a domestic intelligence force. We don't have fortunately, huge government agency that watches everybody's moves like they do in some repressive countries. So that leaves the responsibility up to every one of us.
So 9/11 also ushered in some new legislation, such as the USA Patriot Act. And when that was proposed, there were a lot of discussions, a lot of concerns about citizen privacy, government overreach. In your opinion, did any of those fears come to fruition?
You know, I'm not aware of busloads of people whose lives have been ruined by the USA Patriot Act. I mean, there is obviously, and when you pass any law, there's at least two sides, and sometimes a Rubik's Cube of opinions on what this might do, and including the Patriot Act, which I don't think has had any great impact. There's always going to be somebody who abuses every authority you give them. You know, for example, I know a guy who in the business was an extremely highly competent, very well experienced leader in the security business, and was up for appointment to lead a federal agency. And they found out in the background check that he had used his computer to check on his ex-wife's new boyfriend or something. He lost that job. His career was ruined. If we accompany these authorities with severe punishments for abusing them and have better oversight, I don't think it's an issue.
But it's not really that simple, though. Things never are. It has been an issue. There have been concerns arising over, say, the fusion centers that arose post 9/11, how they're using data, who is being tracked. And people have been upset enough about what they found out through leaks to propose abolishing the main fusion center. So concerns do still exist.
I used to run the fusion center network nationally as part of that CV you mentioned earlier. And the idea is, again, born out of 9/11, because we don't have a domestic intelligence force and don't want one. We had to have some mechanism to connect our state and local police with this new threat that was overseas, but hitting us on our own ground. There was no way to share the information because they didn't have the proper clearances. They didn't have the proper equipment that keeps the information secure as it goes back and forth. So that's why the fusion centers are in place. And it's a necessary idea in the post 9/11 atmosphere. And I don't think they're going to, something like that, we will always need.
You just used a term a second ago, the post 9/11 atmosphere. You know, here we are 20 years on, we've now pulled out of Afghanistan. Does that signal to you that there is actually a shift, and that we are entering a new era? And, you know, what is it from that post 9/11 atmosphere that you think is going to linger on into the future?
You know, that's a good question. Certainly an increased sense of situational awareness, a better cooperation among the various people that have to keep us safe as a country and as individuals. People ask me, you know, with fairly common question is, what's the biggest threat now facing the United States? And, you know, I don't know from hour to hour, the vector changes and the specific group changes, but the biggest ongoing threat is complacency. You know, if we don't stay alert and awake, we don't have really good oversight, we have really good preparation and practicing our own defensive skills, if we don't have a better execution than we saw on January 6th, where people couldn't talk to each other again and didn't have authority to do things that needed to be done. And, you know, if we don't get better at sharing information with each other, that sort of complacency across the board is our biggest threat. So it's good to have this discussion and, you know, keep these ideas alive.
Well, Chet Lunner, thank you.
Thanks for the invitation, Jen.
Well, Chet Lunner is retired from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Department of Homeland Security, among other posts. And he also worked as a news correspondent and Maine newspaper editor back in the 70s and 80s. And it's time now to check the weather with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
A vast majority of Maine is girding for quite the soaking overnight. The mountains in the county very much in need of such. Nearly all regions, more than 50 miles from the Quebec border, will capture over an inch of rain. The Bullseye, the Penobscot Valley east, north of Millinocket and Caribou. Some towns, 3 inches of rain. You may even hear a rumble of thunder overnight. Very clammy, temperatures remarkably uniform, 55 to 60. A cool front will eject this miasma from western portions early in the morning by mid-afternoon east, becoming partly cloudy south, partly sunny over the mountains with a few afternoon showers. North and east, the rain will end by midday with breaks during the afternoon. Breezy statewide. Saturday, mighty fine. More sun than clouds corner to corner. Brightest along the mid and down east coast. 67 in the mountains to 77 far south. Sunday, another front will advance from Canada. Across the northern third of Maine, clouds encroach with showers eventually. South, a mix of sun and clouds. All others, considerable cloudiness with possible afternoon thunder. 66 to 83 north to south. Variable sunshine Monday and little cooler. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's today's Maine news. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up tomorrow on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock, 20 years after the 9/11 attacks, a discussion on lessons learned from Afghanistan. I'm Jennifer Mitchell. Thanks for listening.